everybody, and welcome to the Cancer Survivor Show, brought to you by the Chemo Girls. Well, today it's Sharon only. We're doing this interview on the same day that we interviewed Miss Monica Bryant with Triage Cancer. So Lucy is still not with us. But as before, I just want to extend our well wishes. Lucy, we miss you very much, but we'll see her again next week. So with this interview, I'm going to have Miss Monica kind of introduce herself a little bit and just tell us what she would like us to know about herself. Monica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And thank you for putting up with me for a second interview.
Oh, girl, we've enjoyed having you. No problem. Anytime. You just come back.
Sounds great. Well, my name is Monica, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Triage Cancer. And Triage Cancer is a national nonprofit organization that's dedicated to providing information and resources on all types of cancer survivorship issues. So often people forget or need to be reminded that there are so many more issues that come up as a result of a cancer diagnosis than just the medical ones. So we talk about sort of all the psychosocial issues, the practical, the legal, the financial, that come up as a result of the diagnosis.
Right. And that's so amazing what you guys are doing. The last interview, guys, talks all about what Triage Cancer offers. So if you're listening to this one, go ahead and click back and listen to what Monica gifted us with in the previous interview. It's just a lovely interview. So, a couple of interesting facts about you that are more on the professional side. What I learned was that when you worked in Congress, you worked on the Supreme Court nomination for Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Samuel Alito. That's some amazing stuff. You have really an arsenal of amazing experiences in your life, from what I'm learning. Also, your business partner in Triage Cancer is your sister, and she's a cancer rights attorney.
It's true. We kept it in the family.
That's right. And that we learned last time that you've taken over 50 flights this year in 2013, and it's November, but you did that to educate people on cancer-related legal issues. For that, I mean, just kudos. Thank you for what you're doing. Real quickly, I'd like to ask you, how did you and your sister come together with Triage Cancer?
It's a great question, and it definitely wasn't a straight path. I'd worked in Congress previously, and Joanna, who is my sister, has been working in this field for almost 20 years now in various capacities, and she and I are both strong believers in the power of advocacy, and that, you know, as a country and as a cancer community, we need to be more engaged in advocacy.
Right.
On several levels. And so it just sort of came to us one day that really we wanted to dedicate our careers to helping the cancer community, and that this was the way that we could best do that.
And, you know, I think you are a rare breed. I think that a lot of advocacy, a lot of the movement in the cancer world comes out of survivorship. When people are diagnosed, they make it through their treatment, and then they take their experience and their talents, their gifts, and they roll it in together, and they come out with this beautiful story of survivorship where they give back to the community. But to have someone come in like you have, you know, it's not you that was diagnosed, not your sister, not your mom or dad, and yet you are so willing to jump in with both feet. And I love you for that. I really do. I just think that's truly amazing. So let's jump in with both feet into a few questions about healthcare reform. This is a very interesting topic, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I'm going to throw it out there. I am a perfect idiot on this topic. And so I am really leaning on you here for this information. And I'm really excited to hear what you have to say. So is the Affordable Care Act really going to benefit individuals coping with cancer?
So unequivocally, yes. And before I sort of get into the details, I have to say you're not alone in feeling like you don't have enough information about this law. There was actually a recent study done by the Kaiser Family Foundation that found that 42% of Americans don't actually think that the Affordable Care Act is still the law. Mm. So, yeah, we're in a situation now where we have perhaps some of the widest sweeping changes to our healthcare system coming up, and Americans just don't understand it.
No.
And it's really not by any fault of their own. It's a huge law. It's incredibly complicated. It involves multiple federal agencies. All the states are doing something a little bit different. So just to be clear, too, you know, health care reform, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, it's all the same thing. And that's caused some confusion by itself. But it is, in fact, all the same thing. And you asked earlier if it's going to really impact people coping with cancer. And absolutely it is.
Okay.
Absolutely it is. So one of the major changes that's coming up in just a few weeks is on January 1st, 2014, insurance companies can no longer deny selling somebody a policy because of a pre-existing condition.
That's amazing.
So that's a major change.
It is. And our family, we have gone through a transition recently. My husband worked for the state for years and years and years and years, and he's a counselor, and he has gone into work with a private practice, a smaller practice. And in that change, there was insurance change. Mm-hmm. We have had the same policy. You know, I'm 11 years out at this point, and we've had the same policy. So we have not had to worry about, you know, we've been blissfully ignorant to what it's like trying to get insurance. It was, I won't say it was a nightmare, but it was very involved, and there were times I was concerned that I wouldn't be able to have insurance. So that's amazing knowing that there'll be no denial. It's good.
Yeah. And I think your story is not an uncommon one. I hear stories all the time of people saying, you know, I hate my job, or I want to change jobs, or I'm getting a divorce, or any one of these life things that come up. And one of their top concerns is, what am I going to do for health insurance? And so thankfully, this rule is going to sort of alleviate at least that one concern of all of these major life issues that we have to deal with as we go through it.
Okay. Well, that helps. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then some of the other things that are coming with this?
Yeah. So there's new health insurance options, so not only can you not be denied health insurance because of a cancer diagnosis, but you're going to have some new options for health insurance. And one of the major options are the marketplaces. They're also called the exchanges. So that, again, has caused some confusion for folks. But basically, starting October 1st, these marketplaces opened for business. And I'm sure some of your listeners have probably heard on the news about the marketplaces not working and problems with it and, you know, sort of all the negatives.
Right.
And certainly there have been some glitches with the marketplaces. But open enrollment starts October 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Started October 1st. It goes all the way through March 31st of 2014. So we still have some time. And what these marketplaces are a new way for people to purchase insurance. So, like in your situation, you could have gone to the marketplace for your state and typed in your information, so how many people you have in your household and what sort of type of coverage you're looking for, and then it will pop out your options. Very much like shopping on Amazon or buying a plane ticket on Travelocity. It's It's the same concept of now how you would purchase health insurance. So these marketplaces, hopefully the goal is to simplify the process of purchasing insurance.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, certainly some glitches and some things that need to be fixed, but that doesn't mean that it's a failure. So I think we all just need to be a little bit patient with our federal government as they figure out the glitches.
Yeah, they're having growing pains. I got it.
Yeah, certainly. And then there's also going to be, in some states, an expansion of the Medicaid program. That's going to be some new options. And then what I think is great for the young adult cancer community is a new rule that says that young adults can stay on their parents' health insurance policy until they're 26.
Goodness.
Yeah. So we were seeing lots of situations where maybe young adults were sort of graduating from school and their first jobs didn't offer health insurance. Or maybe it's just taken them a little longer to get through school and they were kicked off their parents' policy because of their age. And so the hope is that this rule will sort of help bridge that gap until they get a job or they're financially stable enough to purchase insurance on their own.
Yeah, I know Well, I'm showing my age, but I'm good with my age. The deal when I was growing up is when you turned 18, it was over. And so you went through college and young adulthood until you were able to get a job that would provide insurance without insurance. I mean, there just was no option. And I have always felt that's odd. I mean, I know that's probably the healthiest portion of our society, you know, undoubtedly. But cancer striking earlier and earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
And so this is good news. Okay, well, there have been some reports that people's choices are going to be limited in the marketplaces. Is that accurate information?
Generally, I would say no, because there's still going to be lots of choices in the exchange. So there's some misconceptions that the exchange is one plan, and that's just not true. But again, really what it's like is it's just going to be a vehicle through which you can shop for and purchase your insurance. So the idea is let's make shopping for insurance more understandable and easier to navigate. And there's actually going to be five categories of plans. And these categories are based on the precious metals. So there's platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. And these categories differ based on how much the plan covers and how much the individual is going to cover.
Right.
So, for example, a platinum plan is going to be a plan where the plan covers 90% of your healthcare costs and the person is responsible for the other 10%. Gold is going to be 80-20. Silver is going to be 70-30, and then bronze is sort of the lowest level of coverage where the plan covers 60% and you cover 40%. But within each one of those categories, there's going to be multiple plans. So you could say, you know, I am a relatively healthy individual and I think I sort of want a middle of the road plan. So show me all of the silver plans available to me in my state. You get to then look at all the silver plans, and maybe you have a doctor that you really want to keep seeing. You could make sure that your doctor takes one particular plan over the other, and then that's the plan that you choose.
Okay.
So it's just like when you're on Amazon or Target.com and you say, you know, show me all the black shirts or just the blue shirts. It's a similar concept.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's helpful. Anything that makes it more simple, more streamlined, because my mind was boggled trying to figure out comparing from one insurance company to the next, what they were going to cover, what they were not going to cover, what my responsibility was going to be, so on and so forth. I was so afraid I was going to miss something and make a wrong choice. So I like the idea that it is going to be a little more standardized
Yes.
That's fantastic. So is the coverage actually going to be affordable? I've heard a lot of people concerned about this, that it will be out there, but that we won't be able to afford it.
And I think that that's a perfectly reasonable concern, because it doesn't help us to have great insurance if none of us can afford it. But the goal of the law is really to make coverage affordable to the average citizen. There's a couple different ways that the law goes about making sure that it's affordable. So the first way is that insurance companies are now limited in what they can look at to decide what your premium is going to be. Your premium is that monthly payment that you pay to have insurance.
Right.
And so before, insurance companies could charge you whatever they wanted.
Uh-huh.
In fact, because you are the chemo girls, women were typically charged more than men. And that's usually a shock to people.
Well, I can see some of the wisdom in that, but then on the front end, but on the back end, no, because women go to the doctor more readily. But I would think you would catch things sooner with us than with a man. And then there's childbirth. I'm sure that's a big deal.
And those are some of the rationales that we've heard. But the idea is really you're generalizing.
Oh, sure.
When you make those kinds of decisions. And it was becoming cost prohibitive for some women to have the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of one thing. And then particularly for your audience, it's that you can't be charged more just because you've gotten sick in the past.
Oh, I just was.
Just because, yeah.
I just was.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always say my two favorite provisions of the law are that insurance companies can't deny you based on a pre-existing condition anymore, and they can't charge you more. That is a major change, again, to our system, and it's going to enable people who have sort of been faced with this horrible diagnosis to not be a second-class citizen anymore.
It sort of levels the playing field just a little.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That's good.
So that's sort of the one way, right? Making insurance cost the same for everybody, even if they've been diagnosed with something. And then also, when you purchase plans in the marketplace, there may be financial assistance options for people.
Hmm.
So there are two types of financial assistance options. The first is a tax credit, and that's going to limit the amount of your monthly premium.
Okay.
And then the second is a subsidy that's going to reduce the amount that you pay when you actually access your health care. So many plans have something called a copayment, where when you go, let's say, see the doctor, you have a copayment that you have to pay,
mm-hmm.
maybe $25. Well, these subsidies will actually reduce that amount that you're paying out of pocket.
That's...
And these financial assistance, yeah.
Yeah, that's good
news.
These
financial assistance options are going to be based on your income level and your family size.
All right. Wow. Now, see, that's something that I'd not heard it, but I really, I felt very confused by all of this. And I really appreciate the way you're able to put this in very simple, concise terms for us. So let me ask you, each state is doing something a little bit different with the exchanges. So where can people find more information about what's happening in each state or in their own state?
So I would say that the number one resource is the government website created by the Affordable Care Act, and that's healthcare.gov.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, I would say, and not to sort of self-promote, but on Triage Cancer's website, we have a blog where we try to, you know, in a couple paragraphs, talk about all of these different issues, and we provide links to other sites. So if anyone is listening and wants sort of some more information specifically about how this affects people coping with cancer, they can check out our blog.
Yeah, and I did check out the blog, and it is just chock full of really good information. It's not difficult to read, but it's also not fluff. I mean, you guys are really tackling very relevant topics and giving fantastic information. So I do encourage people to go to the blog and take a look-see. So what is happening with Medicaid?
Great question. So I mentioned earlier that Medicaid is potentially expanding. So in many states, if somebody doesn't have a child or a disability, no matter how low their income is, they're not currently eligible for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So what the ACA did was it expanded Medicaid and created a category called the newly eligible for individuals who have an income at or below 138% of the federal poverty level. And in normal terms, that comes out to be about $15,000 a year. So basically, it's opening up the program to individuals with pretty low incomes.
Right.
And when the law was passed, that was supposed to be across the country. So every state was going to expand. When the Supreme Court looked at this law and put down their ruling, they essentially made this program voluntary for states. So states had the option as to whether or not they were going to expand. Some states are expanding, some states are not. Some states are still trying to figure it out. And it's a very fluid process. It's changing, I would say, on a weekly basis as to what's happening. But if you're trying to figure out what's happening in your state, I would recommend two different resources. So the Kaiser Family Foundation, and the website is kff.org. Mm-hmm. And then also on our website, on Triage Cancer's website, we have a chart that lists where each state is. And that website is just triagecancer.org.
Well, you guys, again, it's like every time I turn around and listen to more of what you're doing, it's just so needed. And I do hope that people will go and access that site and utilize the resources that you guys offer. So if people in a state that is not expanding Medicaid or implementing the ACA in a way that makes them happy, is there anything that they can do about that?
I really strongly cannot say this enough, but advocacy. So, you know, individuals need to remember that they have a voice. Our country is based on the idea that our elected officials work for us.
Yeah.
And that we have the ability, and it's not just about election time, but we have the ability and, frankly, the responsibility to express our opinions and our feelings and our ideas to our elected officials, because they need to know what their decisions or how their decisions are impacting us. And by us, I mean the cancer community. So they need to understand what it means when you say you're not going to expand Medicaid, and that means that low-income individuals can't get access to early screenings and detection and all of those things that are necessary to make sure that people survive this disease.
Really? Yeah, they're vital. I mean, so important. Everybody should have access to that. So, all right. Well, and I agree with you. I think that you can't grow complacent as an American. You do need to participate in the process and make your thoughts known and your position known. If you don't, you really cannot be upset about the way things go.
Absolutely.
And so you need to step up and be counted. So, well, this has been wonderful. One thing I did want to cover with you real quickly, when I hear people, you know, sort of coffee shop talk or very relaxed social environments and people begin discussing the changes that are coming down the pike, frankly, I hear a lot of fear. I really do.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, what would you say on a practical level to people that are in a fearful place about all of this? Because you certainly know a lot more about it than I do. And just what would you say to them?
Yeah, I think I would say that their fear is understandable, that it's completely understandable to be afraid of the unknown. And that's what we're talking about right now, because none of us have a crystal ball. None of us know exactly how this is all going to shake out. And it is they are major changes. But I would say before passing judgment, let's wait and see how it works. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, I would want to know specifics sort of about their concerns and say that there are resources out there, very good resources out there, that may be able to provide some answers to their questions to sort of alleviate some of that fear, and to not necessarily listen to what you're hearing on the news or reading in newspapers, because it's just too complex a topic to accurately describe and analyze in 30-second commercials or 2-minute news clips. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, really the thing is, let's be patient and see how it shakes out, and make sure that you're getting your information from unbiased, reliable sources.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing, isn't it? To find unbiased,
absolutely,
reliable sources. So for that, I thank you for being there for us. Will you please give us any social media information that we need to completely plug in with what you guys are doing at Triage Cancer?
Absolutely. So we are on Twitter, mm-hmm, at Triage Cancer. We're also on Facebook at Triage Cancer. We have a newsletter that we try to get out every month, where we just sort of cover highlights of current happenings and whatnot. And on Twitter and Facebook, we sort of try to put out information where people can easily digest nuggets of things that are happening. And, you know, we engage our elected officials on Twitter. So definitely if you're a tweeter or a Facebook fan, please connect with us, because we'd love to hear from you.
Well, that's great. Guys, it's time for our not just surviving, but thriving tidbit of the day. And Monica offered us a great tidbit on our last show, and I'm coming up to the plate with a tidbit now. Our not just surviving, but thriving tidbit of the day is just a moment that perhaps you were busy, you're running down your to-do list, you're handling the business of life, and you stop, you set it down and look around you. Life is always offering you an opportunity to engage and plug in. And so the tidbit is just a time where you decided to do that. For me, my tidbit is that recently we have taken in a dog. This dog's name is Bella, and she has been... You know, before I was worried it was going to add to my to-do list, right? I need to feed the dog and take it to the vet, and there's the financial commitment and all this stuff that we do in our head, you know, trying to rationalize and be responsible, which is good, you know. But the reality of Bella being in my home is such a gift. You know, in the evening when I want to work, when all the kids go to bed and I'm ready to really knock things out and get things done, this awesome, fantastic little dog comes. Well, she's not little. She's 41 pounds. But she comes and puts her head on my lap. And I end up setting everything off to the side and loving on her and getting on the floor and playing with her, and it has just been such a remarkable addition to my life. It adds life to my day every single day. She is one of the first things I think of in the morning and one of the last little faces I see in the evening, and I'm grateful for that. So that's my little tidbit for the day. Guys, I invite you to come and check us out on our Facebook site. It is My Chemo Cocktail, the and for sign, me, My Chemo Cocktail and Me. Our regular site is at www.mychemococktailandme.com. We offer a blog there. We post two blogs a week, so you can check into that. Sometimes there's some real cohesion with these podcasts. And then clearly our podcast site, which I'm hoping you guys have already visited, is www.thecancersurvivorshow.com. I want to take a moment and thank Miss Monica for two really excellent interviews. Thank you very much, Miss Bryant.
Thank you so much for having me.
We hope to have you back again. I'm sure that we will need your resources. And again, I really encourage everyone to go and check out what they have to offer, because this is not just a little fluff organization. These ladies are really offering what I'd call meat and potatoes in these areas, really important information. So with that, we're going to say goodbye to all of our listeners by Miss Monica. And I want everyone to remember that, as always, Lucy and I, we're not just surviving, but we're here to thrive with you. Bye, everybody.